ready. It's time to forge the narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge Narrative. My name is Paul Murphy, your host. This is episode 162. I'm joined today by Justin Troop.
What's up?
And Admiral Bromwitz.
What's up, gamers?
What's going on, guys? A lot of cool stuff happening right now. We just got some drops from Games Workshop themselves, Gene Stealer Cult, like, images. Looks like some cool robot thing with, like, a big saw blade hand. We've seen some, rumor of looted Imperial Guard tanks. I mean, I'm excited.
The rumor is it's the limo, but I think there's some old 40K players out there that would really like to see the limo make a comeback, but I don't know, man. I don't know how I feel about that.
I think that they're just fleshing them out with some fun uniqueness, you know? I don't think there's a limo resurgence. There was clearly a picture of what looked like an open top Torox kind of vehicle.
Yeah, I think that might not be a bad thing. Maybe it's a Torox with an upgrade kit or another sprue or something similar to like the way the battle wagon works.
Right.
It looks like a cross between a battle wagon and a Torox.
Yeah, and that kind of fits like the theme. You know, like the Tempestus guys are, you know, this elite unit. The Gene Stealer Cult are infiltrating and you know, trying to stage a coup, if you will. I don't know. That's like mildly putting it.
I like how they're phrasing the Gene Stealer Cults, too. It's very much very cult-ish and giving it its kind of own flavor that, you know, I mean, it's been forever since I've really explored the background of the Gene Stealer Cults, although they were very – even in my gaming crew a long time ago, they were very popular. Yeah, the limos were cool, but they were never – like Games Workshop never made that model. So that's all just in our minds, and that was in some White Dwarfs back when a lot of build-your-own kind of things were about.
Yeah, dude. So that first video, like the lengthy one, was creepy, all right? Like it was full-on like chills down my spine. Creepy, like how they had that they're expressing like what they're doing, like they're really there to like purge that planet or that sector or whatever it is for the alien host to come, the Tyranid host. And it's like, these dudes are nuts.
I do hope in whatever this becomes that they do get to work a little bit better with the actual Tyranids. Now, I know there's a lot of value in making them their own thing and, you know, getting more use out of the kits like the Imperial Guard. I mean, we definitely saw we see a Leman Russ in the picture. If it's a stock Leman Russ, I don't know, but we saw a tank there that looks like a Leman Russ.
Hey, you get some tentacle makers, and you can do some crazy Tyranid-like conversions and stuff with that. So that'd be – I think it'd be fun either way.
Oh, Tyranid's got good bits. Sorry, go ahead, Adam.
No, it's okay. I saw the Buzzsaw had a lot of chatter on the web, and that seemed like a strange weapon. I think it's kind of cool. We don't really see Buzzsaws outside of orcs.
The profile of that thing had like a fishbowl. It's like it's got like a fishbowl head.
Exactly. That's what I was getting at. It doesn't look like it's a, what do they call the early transitioning Gene Stealer Cult guys? Because they have different levels, right?
There are. There's stage something hybrids and there are.
Right. See, this is where we need the librarian. He might know this, but it looked like it was a latter stage Gene Stealer Cult.
No, I think it's going to be something like an outer space robot or something that one of them sits inside. You know, because remember from the game, they've got like mining tools, so they're obviously, you know, from some type of mining crew or whatever. I think this may fall in line with. I mean, I don't know.
Oh yeah,
I'm looking at the same thing you guys are.
Like the axe, pick, drill, bit looking things on those hunched over, beefy looking dudes.
Yeah, and one guy, you know, the three arm guy. With the some kind of cutter, I don't know. We're really just theorizing at this point, but it's really cool that we're getting this. I mean, I know it's they're banking off the figures, or I guess building off of figures from the IG and figures from the game. But I mean, I don't care. I mean, this is something that people have been wanting to play for a long time, and you know, these guys got squatted for lack of a better term, a long time ago.
I was just gonna say, like, there's got to be a time, like maybe April 1st this year or something. Like, there's going to be a time when Games Workshop gets us all set up and pumped about something like Gene Stealer Cult or, you know, whatever it is that we've been dying to see, and then they just release squats. It's got to happen, right?
I hope so. Space Dwarves, you know, look, I know people enjoyed them back then. It's just difficult. But now the technology, you know, they can make things differently and look different and release upgrade kits. Anyway, I'm really excited. You know, I don't know what the impact of it is going to be, but I think it's definitely scratching an itch for a lot of players.
Expands the universe at the very least, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. thank y'all for indulging me a little bit while I talked about that. That's just something that, you know, we've seen the teasers. We're probably going to get more info, as the week we get to the weekend. But, you know, hey, exciting, exciting times.
And what else do we have in terms of releases? Blood Angels aren't done yet, are they, Paul?
And I think they're going to be done as far as, I mean, all the figures exist already. We are going to see another Black Crusade campaign book. But what? So if there's anything in there, you know, we don't know. But we know there's more Black Crusade books coming. Things are not slowing down for Games Workshop, and it's only better for us. Speaking of us, if I can take us into another topic, Warzone Atlanta is coming up. We're now really, a month and a half outside of Warzone Atlanta.
I just bought my plane ticket literally 2 hours before we started recording.
Yes, sold out event. We sold out the original set of 100 tickets, sold out in about 8 hours. Then we opened up 10 more slots and we booked them from the wait list. And they immediately filled up. But, you know, when we make sure we have the space, some people have I didn't want to open up the extra slots unless we had the real staff to make those people happy. I mean, we're all about the kind of the experience of the tournament, and that goes for everybody. You know, me, Kelly, and Steven that are working behind the scenes to organize everything. We really care about the experience. And so it was a big deal to open it up to more people because, you know, we care about the table space. We care about the overall customer experience. And some people, another person at least, has dedicated their whole weekend to just helping us with the tables and making sure everyone's got a judge or finds a judge or knows where the bar is or whatever. It's very important that they did that, helping us maintain that experience. So opening up the 100 to the extra 10 slots is awesome. Friday night, we have two events scheduled for Friday night. The X-Wing tournament's been on the list for a while now, and I want to talk about one of our sponsors of the event, the Curled Paw Creatives. You can actually find them on Etsy as well, and it's Curled Paw Creatives, just like it sounds, is the name of their store. And in addition to some really cool inspired art that they got out there, you can get some prints, he also makes laser-cut tokens and templates. And these, he's stocking out the X-Wing side of things and also providing, I believe, some swag for the overall tournament. I've talked to this guy in chat on Facebook. He's also got a Facebook site, Curl Paw Creatives. Real engaged guy. And the stuff, if you go to his Etsy shop, you can see pictures of a lot of his stuff there. It's got a unique look and feel to it. I think I showed it to Justin a few minutes ago, and you may have bought some things. I don't know. You've been quiet for a while, so I only assume that means you're buying things.
I couldn't help myself. I was digging through, as everybody knows, I love X-Wing. I think it's a great game. These are probably some of the more unique design tokens that I've ever seen. Just down to the shape and down to what's on the token itself. It's really good quality stuff. Check it out. I have a cart saved and I'm going to make my purchase as soon as we're done recording, but there's some neat stuff on there.
In terms of the show, we have labels. TPM is the leader. Chris is the librarian. Andrew is the lawyer. I'm the idiot. And Justin is the buyer.
Wait, you're the painter. There's a difference. You're the art. I should say artist. You're the artist.
Well, thanks. That makes me feel better. I used to be. I've been upgraded. I used to be the idiot. But no, this stuff is really, really amazing. I mean, this is I've heard the Curled Paw name. I've seen some of the tokens before. But the actual printed artwork, if you guys, you know, dress up your rooms. If you guys are living in apartments with white walls, you know, get some of this artwork to put, you know, to hang up there. It's really beautiful stuff.
The dude has got the touch as far as this kind of stuff goes. Everything on this site you'll find has got a real, like even down to the width of the tokens and stuff, it seems like it's got a real good texture to it and a real lot of thought put into it, which I like. And this guy's, I mean, in addition to being a generous sponsor for the event, I have spoken with him and he's real engaging and was happy to kind of work with us on the way here. So please, since he's supporting us, but go check out the site. And if you can't make it to Warzone, you know, maybe see about picking something up from this Etsy page.
Yeah. And I will say too, I've bought a lot of tokens from a lot of vendors. These prices are insane. Like this is the best price for the best quality bar none I've ever seen on the market. So, Really, I would check it out. If you have, even if you're considering playing X-Wing, you're not going to be out a lot of money if you go buy some stuff.
I think that having some of these, the movement stuff, and in a way that's kind of easier to feel around with instead of the cardboard, it makes a big difference in the overall experience of the game. I mean, we play these games for hours at a time. It's just, I think, in my opinion, it's just better to have cooler looking stuff.
I'm just going to throw this out here. You know, I don't play X-Wing personally. I might, maybe someday I will. But I'm looking at these tokens and I really want to buy them and I want to find a use.
Just call to you, right?
Okay. I will say, I wish we had more tokens like this in 40K. Like, I would love an invisibility token or a jink token, you know, really quality printed tokens like these.
This stuff's out there, yeah, but not quite this this texture, I think. And that's what's so great about these is they do seem to have a really good kind of feel, which is anyway, like I said, goes back to we spend a lot of time playing with these. You know, we might as well play with the coolest stuff. But anyway, check them out, folks. Listening, if you don't mind, let us know you checked them out. If you do end up getting anything, let me know you heard about us on the show or heard about them on the show, and then they will be on site at Warzone. So if you're coming, you know, maybe pick some stuff up there as well. But I want to definitely feature them as we get closer to the event. I want to feature more and more of the people that are contributing to the event. You know, we really do try to prize as deep as we possibly can, and the reason we can do that is because of some of the people that we get to sponsor the event. I want to maybe highlight one other sponsor before we move on. Cause I mean, there is a ton of stuff to talk about. I've been building lists. I played a couple of test games for Combat Patrol. That also Friday night of Warzone, we're having a 30K Horus Heresy Combat Patrol event. The ticket for that is now up for sale on the WarzoneAtlanta.com website. It's $10. So if you're going to be there anyway, you might as well bring some figures and roll some dice with us on Friday night. When we start both the X-Wing and the Combat Patrol event is going to largely depend on when we get everything loaded in. We hope to have everything up and going by 5 p.m. Eastern time. So if you plan on making it to the events or making it on Friday, if you can plan to be there by 5 o'clock, which is if you get in there about 2 o'clock, you're going to dodge a lot of Atlanta traffic, depending on which way you're coming from. Definitely play in one of these Friday events. But over the past weekend, I played some Combat Patrol test games, kind of figuring out the missions, the best way to do it. And we'll talk about that later on. But I also want to talk about another local sponsor is Vendetta Games. You can find them on Facebook at Vendetta Corp, just like it sounds. And that's where their Facebook page is. They have a local store in Dahlonega. That's where a good amount of folks that come to our local tournaments play out of. I think that may be their local store. But Vendetta Games is a big sponsor of the event in the form of some prize support. You know, I hear nothing but good things about that store. Dahlonega is in a really cool part of Georgia. So if you're ever passing around that area, I'm sure they will not mind if you go in and check them out.
And, you know, and Paul, just to kind of further add on, if you're trying to search for them, if you type in Vendetta Games, they will come up. Vendetta Corp is definitely their at tag, though. So good on you, Paul.
That's on Facebook is what you're talking about, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Nice folks. They've even got a guy there who makes some really kind of creative trophies. So if you're playing in the area, you know, or playing at a tournament there, you may come away with a cool looking trophy. I've been envious of some of the pictures that I've seen.
Yeah, that's my favorite thing that some of these local stores are doing. You see them around the country, but they do these unique trophies and stuff like that for when they do their tournaments or RTTs and stuff. Like, that is how you help build a community. Like, those little takeaways are what makes people come back. I wish I lived closer so I could check it out, but
maybe pass by there on the way to Warzone.
Well, we're definitely going to stop by while we're in town.
Again, they have also been very generous with us as far as prize support. We've got a lot of prizes at Warzone. We have 4 champions. So when anybody ever asks me who wins Warzone, it's 4 people that come away. They are the tournament champions. We don't pride the battle point guy better than the painter guy or anything else. I mean, this is we do have 4 champions from this event. But then in addition to that, we've got brackets. So after on day one, people are, you know, you're playing all your games, and then that decides the brackets that you're in for day 2. And you don't you compete throughout the whole run of the tournament. This is where it gets a little difficult to explain. You compete throughout the whole run of the tournament, but you're competing against also in addition to the overall field, your bracket that you were placed in after your performance on Saturday. So anyway, that means that even if we just had, you know, with 110 people, we might have 11, 12 brackets. So there's 11, 12 more prizes. And if we can go, you know, and a lot of prizes. I know I'm talking about the prizes because it's exciting. I loved giving away all that stuff on Sunday. It was really cool. I was kind of clunky the way I did it, but I enjoyed every moment of it. Giving it away to folks and want to replicate that the best we can. And the way we do that is through these, again, these generous contributions from our sponsors. So very happy to have them. We're going to continue to talk about a few more over the coming weeks, and you'll see them on our Facebook page getting ready for Warzone Atlanta. We certainly have the prize pool, at least we're assembling it to make it to where, again, we can prize as deep as we possibly can, a high percentage of awards, but people earn it. I mean, this is, we even gave away a last place prize at the last event. So anyway, it's just very cool. But speaking of Facebook pages and stuff that I was just talking about, where we're going to be featuring lots of this stuff on the Forge Narrative page and the Warzone Atlanta page, we started a group called the Kitbash Crew. And we mentioned this last episode, and it's gotten pretty popular, and people are sharing some really cool ideas of kitbash miniatures. Some painted, some unpainted. You know, the rules are it's just got to be a kitbash, and, you know, it'd be cool if you explained the bits that you used when you were doing it. And there's a big difference between kitbash and conversion. At least I feel that way. You don't have to share painted miniatures, but even if you just want to look and see all the cool stuff that other people are doing, it's called the Kitbash Crew. Kitbash is one word, Kitbash. Space Crew, CREW.
Yeah, there's some so unique things up there. One of the good friends of the show, he shares work with us all the time. Amazing painter, dude's colorblind. It makes no sense.
So how does that even fare? How is that fair?
Right. It makes no sense. But he just posted up some.
And what I mean by that, I can see all the colors and still can't come anywhere near what this guy does.
Yeah, it's like, I don't understand what color this is, but I'm blending it and it's beautiful. he's amazing. But he posted some Tau stuff, and he's got like crew, like Manning Riptides, and I don't know the names of some of those suits. Sorry. But
I think you're close.
It's one of them. It might be a broadside. I'm not sure. But what it is like they're Manning it kind of like in The Matrix or in Alien, you know, those like suits that they had. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, the thing that Ripley beats up the queen with, yeah.
Yeah, or Dreadnought, you know, I guess that probably would have been the best way to try to describe it. But that's what it looks like. It looks like a crew manning a suit like a Dreadnought, and it's so well done and so well painted. Check out that stuff. There's so many unique other things out there. It's a plethora of knowledge, and dudes, everybody's willing to share. And that's the biggest thing is like, yo, how did you do that? And it's like, I got my trade secrets. No,
it's like, it's been an open group. I mean, people are, and it sounds like we're shilling, but this is only like, this is to look at cool stuff. I love looking at cool things. That's why I started the group. I kitbashed some Marines and wanted to build some more. That's why I was like, hey man, there's got to be some more ideas out there. Yeah. Let's start sharing them.
Dude, so many people with such great ideas. I love seeing it, like Demon Prince conversions all day with different bits from all sorts of different kits. Oh, it's awesome.
Man, it's cool seeing a picture of something like, you know, you're browsing at lunch or whatever, and then thinking about it the whole day till you get home and start putting some stuff together. You guys, check it out. If that is your thing, please do join us. It's been a really cool community kind of group so far. And just fabulous to see everybody sharing their stuff. So you guys want to talk about some Blood Angels?
What are those?
This is a first in the history of my life, and especially me on the show. I want to talk some Blood Angels.
Well, I want to talk just specifically about, because we highlighted some of the Death Company and the Golden Host on the last time we talked about this. As we digest the book, things like that Terminator formation keep kind of coming back up to the front of the mind. And it's I want to talk about the Terminators, because we discussed them, but I don't think that we kind of went as in detailed or as, I guess, as flowery as maybe that we should have, like we did with the Golden Host. Because don't get me wrong, getting Dante in a formation and some Sanguinary Guard is beautiful. I've been waiting on that my whole life. I cannot wait to feel that on people. But the Terminators, I mean, let's not, 15 Terminators that get to act and be a part of the game the moment they come down is nothing to put off.
It's so big. I mean, it's what they've needed for a long time. You know, a lot of people, you know, oh, I want an extra toughness. I want an extra wound. I want an extra this. No, this is what you needed. Like, they're dropping and they're wrecking right then and there. That's big, because you don't have to, you don't have to worry about foot slogging them to try to charge. You don't have to worry about deep striking them and then sitting there and waiting for a turn. And, you know, hopefully you don't get intercepted and or shot off the table by the other round of shooting. Like, you're there, drop in, do the Lord's work, and get out.
Let's talk about intercept for a second. And this is kind of one of the reasons why I was initially drawn to the Golden Host. And I'm not sure that we went into this far to it. I'm not going to sidetrack this onto the Golden Host. But the Golden Host does not have to start in reserve. You can choose to start that on the table. I believe the Terminators have to be held in reserve.
I believe you are right.
Which is not terrible most of the time. The only time it's really a factor, and this is where I'm going with it, is when you're dropping in against, let's say Tau with a bunch of quality intercept fire.
Yeah. I get worrisome when I see Tau, because I just assume that they have it. And, you know, yeah, you got your 2+, but it's Tau, you know,
well,
what I mean?
Like, the Terminators, where I'm going, is that you can get the 3+ invulnerable. So it almost kind of belays that fear a bit, because they do have that extra layer of protection built in with them. They don't have a Dante to suck down wounds, but you can put a 3+ invulnerable on those guys.
Yeah, Thunderhammer, Storm Shield. I'm convinced that there should be no other kit, but, you know, that's for another topic.
I think you even brought this up, but I believe that with the ability to actually get into combat, that there is a bigger case for packing up a couple of Lightning Claws.
Yeah. So I'm joking about Lightning Claws, of course. They are good, because now you're charging right then and there. I think putting them on the Sergeant to eliminate, you know, maybe that challenge. You can get in there, and you most of the time you're striking against something in armor 3, generally speaking, right?
Well, you can certainly pick and choose, you know, what you attack, right? When you're able to do this, they have the swift deployment. All units in this formation must be held back at deep strike reserve.
Yeah.
That's the Archangel's Orbital Intervention Force, is the one we're talking about.
Yeah, so, you know, if you throw a set of claws on the Sergeant, and then, you know, maybe even one other guy, so a 3-2 ratio, hammers to claws, then you're putting a dynamic unit out there that can drop in. You might be able to knock out some dudes, and eliminate some wounds before your guys with the shields have to take wounds as well, which is another kind of a defensive combo if you think about it.
Or if you're going into something, you know, maybe you do have to absorb some intercept. You just throw that dude out there with the Lightning Claws or the shield, depending on what you need.
Yeah, and a blade of wound, if you will. Yeah.
Save yourself a few points. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of play to do it. I think me personally, I'm probably just going to go all hammers and shields, just because. But putting in a couple claws might help you finish the combat in the following round of your opponent's assault phase, which in turn will help you get out of that combat.
Well, all these things, when they come down, make a disordered charge. And that is not as bad as it seems, because you want to be in combat during your enemy's shooting phase. So, you know, having that neg one attack, not terrible. I can't think of a situation where it's like backbreaking or a huge hindrance with most of the things you're going to want to be attacking anyway. Now, the Archangel's Orbital Intervention Force doesn't get to choose when it comes in. So manipulating when it comes in, it's just easier to manipulate it coming in sooner. It's not so easy to manipulate them coming in later.
Yeah, the only caveat to that is they all come in on one roll.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can count on that. You can make an impact, I think, when they do come in. And that doesn't stink. But, you know, we're weighing this kind of versus the Golden Host, I think, because they perform very, very similar roles.
Oh, yeah. Alpha Strike for days, man. You dropping in and assaulting from reserves, period. It doesn't matter what you're assaulting with. They're good.
Well, they've got quality saves. These 2+ saves. Terminators look cool on the table, too. Especially the new Blood Angel kits.
Yeah, the new Blood Angel kit is sick. So, you know, dropping in 15 of these bodies with this quality gear, and these dudes are the legit veterans. Like, these are the elite melee dudes. Like, you know, talking about the lore a little bit, these guys are it. You know, like, these are the number one bad A dudes right before they start making the rank of captain and stuff like that. So these guys get in there and they handle business. And no matter how you're equipping them, they do it. I love it.
Sometimes, I mean, I got a buddy who plays with 10 Terminators all the time, with Thunderhammers and Storm Shields, and sometimes you just don't fail the 3+ saves.
Yeah, golly, man, this is such an awesome addition to choose from. You know, like we talked the Golden Host, we talked the Death Company. This is like that solid third choice too. Like in no specific order, but. Mind you.
I know there's a little bit of redundancy maybe in some of the rules. Like everything is getting something that can come in, or every Marine is getting something that can come in out of deep strike and assault. But I don't mind that. I think that that is a perfect Marine thing.
That's how Marines were meant to. I mean, if anybody's read any of the Horus Heresy books, let alone any other, you know, Black Library book that had something to do with Marines, what do? They come in out of deep strike or out of a pod and assault. That's what they do.
Yeah. So, and to have this kind of this thing in the Blood Angels even more. It's that avenging angel coming down out of the heavens and just doing what Marines do, just wreck face. I don't mind seeing it in a couple of different formations in this book with these two iconic units like Terminators and what have become iconic with the Sanguinary Guard and Dante. I mean, Dante is the living icon.
He's probably one of the cooler chapter masters out there, that's for sure.
Well, he's the coolest chapter master.
There's other guys out there that are pretty cool.
we caught a little flack when we were talking about who's the number one character, like stat-wise in the game. And people were rooting for Dante and, of course, rooting for Drago. But, I mean, I'm Dante all the way.
Is stat-wise, can Drago actually hold a candle to Dante?
Drago's got a 3+ save, 4 wounds.
Drago hurts Dante all day long.
You think?
It's insane.
Yeah. Yeah. Dante only has a 4+ in vulnerable save. And that's where there used to be a lot of a contention between Logan and Drago. You know, who wins between Logan and Drago. And it's always that 3+ invulnerable wins out, no matter, with all the else, everything else being equal, the 3+ invulnerable save wins.
They're both striking at initiative. They're both striking at a higher strength. Drago's strength is higher. They're both striking at AP2.
But Drago's, they're both wounded on twos.
Right. Touche. So that's fair. So I guess that doesn't matter. But, I mean, it's just pound for pound, Drago does work. Like, Dante is a beast.
I don't want any more messages. Dante is my winner. I don't want anyone else.
Hey, yo, I was answering quite a few myself. But, look. If you need a dude to drop in and do work and sit there and absorb work, Drago's your man. If you need to be places and do work, Dante's your man.
Well, hit and run. If we're talking stat-wise, you can't beat cheat and run, essentially, is what I call it, right?
That's true as well.
Not that Dante's ever going to kill Drago with his melta pistol or whatever, but yeah, anyway. I don't want to necessarily start the character death match either. I just wanted to, it was funny, but that's what's one of the coolest things about the lore is that you really can, like, you can create a defensible position to whoever your favorite is and talk about it all day long.
One guy wanders the warp and battles. Well,
I mean, any character,
all day
any
long. Character.
We could talk about Shrike, any chapter master. We could talk about Pedro Cantor. We could talk about Lysander. He's a captain. You know, that's the if we're putting our money on number one captains, Lysander is. Hold on.
Yeah, no questions asked. I feel confident that we won't receive any hate mail for that.
No, there will be no. There we go. The polls are closed on Lysander being number one captain. But anyway, I just love it that we can have those kind of conversations and nobody's wrong, and we can, you know, again talk about it for all day long. So the Archangel Orbital Intervention Force is a contender. If you were already thinking about playing that, don't change and play anything else we've talked about. I think it is awesome and will perform very comparably to the Golden Host. I do like the flexibility of being able to choose when you come down with the Golden Host, but you're not always going to be in a situation where you don't want them in on turn two. I mean, that's reality.
So the question that I had to play the other side of the fence here a little bit, I wanted to compare this to something else out there that hits hard, durable, and basically you want them in combat. So I landed on the Wolf and Murder Pack. Point for point, it's a 3-point difference. If you do three Storm Shields and Thunder Hammers and two Axes on the Wolfen versus all Thunder Hammer Storm Shields for the Terminators. Now, there's 15 bodies, 15 wounds with the three ups. The Wolfen, they got two wounds, you know, so like, and feel no pain. So like, there's like a little bit of a debate for me right now, like internally, if I want to use something, which one do I use? Because right now I'm putting both on the list because I can't make the decision.
The Wolfen are undeniably strong. They are a force multiplier to some degree. They get to swing twice. I mean, it's difficult to compare them, I think, if you ask me.
Yeah, I mean, like apples to oranges, right? But these are the kinds of questions when, you know, when we see these books and stuff and we're looking at these rules, like these are the kinds of things that I like to do because I think that's what helps you see the book in whole, right? Like you're seeing it for what it is. You're comparing it to other units and you're getting a better idea for what it is. And you don't just get roped into like, oh, wow, like this Death Company formation is cool and this is all I'm ever going to run.
Like, I agree. Even if you help talk yourself out of things like, oh, maybe I shouldn't do that. Or you reinforce it like, hey, this unit's good and it has similar profiles to this other unit that's also good. So maybe I can, if I want to play this faction, this is what I should choose.
Exactly. Like, oops, why did I just make 15 warp talons? Let me rip their arms off real quick.
yeah, my Raptors all the way. All right, guys, let's take a quick break, and then I'm going to come back and talk about this Combat Patrol event. I had a real fun time testing this, building some lists, and I want to tell you what I think the cheese is. Like, that's so I, that's, mm. I want to put that out there right now. We discovered some cheese in the testing and I think it's all fine. Everything has a balance, but I think creating a knowledge about what that is, will help people have a better time.
Did you say cheese whiz? Cause I'm from Philly and I like mine whiz wit.
Sounds good. I did not, but now you're making me hungry. See you guys in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Bell of Lost Souls. Check out www.bols.org for the best daily hobby articles on the web.
Hey everybody, we are back. I'm still TPM. I got Adam Abramowitz.
Hey guys, I'm still here.
And Justin Troop.
I left, but I'm here.
He had to make some purchases. Curl Paul tokens.
Yeah. I just noticed something, before Paul jumps us into what we're going to talk about some more here. On those tokens that he's making, I just noticed that there's little nubs. So you can put your cluster mines and stuff like that and attach them with your movement rulers and stuff like that. And they go seamless.
It is like you're speaking another language, but it sounds really impressive.
You're welcome. Anybody that plays X-Wing will understand what I'm talking about. And their minds are blown right now and they're all making purchases too.
Cool. I'll take your word for it. So Combat Patrol, I mentioned that I was going to tell you guys what the cheese is, but let me tell you what the rules are first. Combat Patrol, we talked about it. Games Workshop published it on their site. The rules are 400-point limit. That's standard apparently for Combat Patrol. You can take, and this is a Horus Heresy event. You can only take things from the Legion Astartes, Mechanicum and Solar Auxiliary, and the Imperialis Militia and Cults. So in Loyalist or Heretics, all fine. Just anything from those books. It's mostly like human and Admech type based conflicts. You have to take one troop at least, and there's an optional one additional troop, one HQ, one elite, one heavy support, one fast attack. All units must be chosen from the same legion or faction. Up to one model, 0-1 model, may have a 2+ save. 50 wounds or hull points maximum total per force. There's a reason for that. A lot of the non-marine based, you could take 100 and something dudes, and it's just these games are designed to be quick, they're designed to be fun, and there's going to be a little narrative element to them, but this is why there's a wound limit. 0-5 heavy or special weapons upgrades per force. Now, let me also state that at the time I put these on the paper, I'd forgotten that in the Heresy books, things aren't listed out as special and heavy weapons are just upgrades, but we all know what a special and or heavy weapon is. And so you only get 5 of them total per upgrade now, five of them total per force. Now, there are some squads that come with like every member of them has a flamer. That's not an upgrade. They come with the flamer. So, you know, that doesn't count against your total. Any upgrades, only 0-5 heavy, your special weapon upgrades. Vehicles must have a total armor value of less than 33. That's the front plus the side plus the rear, and no special characters. If you don't have an independent character in your army to be your warlord, then you can pick another character and he becomes your patrol leader. And your patrol leader gets +1 wound up to a maximum of 3, and he becomes your warlord. All troops and elites are objective secured, and your warlord might only roll on the command or personal table for this event.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, the point increase is pretty neat. I like limiting the the power weapons, basically. Or, well, not
power weapons. Heavy, yeah, like, melta guns, plasma guns, yeah. Las cannons, auto cannons, that sort of thing.
The powerful guns. Just because at the points limit, you know, there are squads out there that can abuse that. And that would make for not a fun time, I think. And so in spirit of what the event is, to roll dice, have fun, I really do dig this. And, you know, you're talking about this event more and more and more. It's making me think like something cool, like maybe I can buy a couple dudes out of the Raven Guard or something. And that would fit to this kind of concept. And you know, not a big investment. It's a fun hobby project.
God, those Raven Guard Assault guys look so cool with the big claws and the cool jump pack.
Yeah, those dudes, they're recon sniper guys. Those guys are awesome looking. You know, and there's my five special weapons right there.
Well, this is – so I'm trying to build out some missions, some fun missions that you can actually play at 400 points. And that is it's a little bit challenging because, you know that you can't have all these kind of complexities within complexities or what have you, because you've only got a limited number of units because it's 400 points. Now, some of these armies, I'm going to talk about what I think the cheese is here in a second, with ways to really maximize that 400 points and the wound limit. Andrew Whitaker just joined us, so I'm going to catch him up to speed too. And this combat patrol event, it's 400 points with an abbreviated force org. And then there's a wound and or hull point max, for the force.
Combat Patrol has some, and thanks everybody for welcoming me on, but Combat Patrol has some cool dynamics with its restrictions, right? It's not an average game of 40K. It has some good built-in dynamics because of its restrictions. It's not like a GT or RTT where you're like, they draw arbitrary lines based on what they think is going to be best, but Combat Patrol has some fun requirements.
Yeah, it's neat. And in this one, I'm allowing people to take at least 1/2+ armor save, because this is all going to the theme of the event's going to be around the Isfahan 3 original betrayal, where Horus tried to weed out all the loyalists within the heretic legions. So this is going to be brother and brother type battle. And anyway, we're playtesting some missions, or at least the mission ideas, this past weekend, and I built a Mechanicum force, which I think is absolutely brutal. And obviously, I won't be playing in the event. And if I were to come in as a ringer for an odd number of folks, I would definitely not take this list. But it was a unit of the kind of their little robot troop guys. You can take a unit of 10 or 11 of those and give them an upgrade that makes them fearless. And then go to the elite choice and take the Ursacs that we've talked about, which have 3 wounds apiece, and they're jump infantry that come with lightning claws with 4 attacks on the charge, which you can also give power fist to. They are monsters.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds like, I mean, just the 3 wounds and then the punch that
they've only got a 4+ save, but they do have feel no pain. Yeah, so that makes them very obnoxious. So, and the only reason I mention this. Go ahead.
Quick sidebar, 4+ armor and 5 feel of pain makes you a slightly better than a 3+ armor save.
Yeah.
So you're like a little bit better than a Marine.
Yeah. So they are initiative 2, which kind of stinks. But when they do make it to swing, it is brutal with all these lightning claw and or power fist attacks. Plus, if in a pinch, they've got a backup chest gun that they can fire in close combat that does instant death.
That's awesome.
I think I need help here, Paul. You know the models that I have at my disposal from my Space Marine Army last year, which could very easily fit into 30K. They're Sons of Horus, after all. Build me a list.
Yeah, well, absolutely. The Marines, you know, utilizing that 2+ armor save and then being able to all the Legion tactics that are out there right now help give you an advantage. You don't get a Lord of War or a Rite of War at this point level. The way the Horus Heresy works is you don't get like a true warlord that gets army buffs and stuff at the low point level. But there are a bunch of other squads like Breacher squads or the support squads or even assault squads got a real bargain. There's a Blood Angel force that you could build that takes a chaplain, an apothecary, and a 10-man assault squad that's decently equipped that all fits within the 400 points. And that all with jump packs. And that's a pretty brutal squad.
It's a big squad too at 400 points.
So you work in like how I would want to beat these crazy lunatics I was just telling you about would be the like lightning claws and or they're toughness 5, so you can't melt gun them out. I mean, it is That's only some cheese. There's some cheese in the guard because they can take things like artillery and have a certain amount of quality bodies in the squad. This is not to intimidate anyone. This is going to be a very fast, like the I plan to run four rounds starting around 5 p.m. and be done by 9:10 p.m. But there is ability here to game it even with the combat patrol restrictions. So I just kind of want to build some awareness of things that, you know, like anything we try to, it's fun and it's casual, but it's also a competitive edge to it because people are going to win it because there's going to be some prizes.
I mean, there's so much diversity and they're all the books that are out now.
There's three red books out now that have all the army list and all the rules for everything that you would possibly need to play. It is, if you don't already have it, they're a pretty light investment versus the quality of book that you get. And I'm not going to mind counts as for this event too. I mean, this is for people to come and play. And as long as people can tell what they're playing against, I'm all cool with it. Let's roll some dice on Friday.
Yeah, it sounds like a great time. Hopefully I'm going to be able to participate. I want to do X-Wing.
X-Wing is it's going on Friday night too. It's a very viable event. I want people to play in that too. But this combat patrol came late on the schedule, so I want to make sure that everyone is aware of it. And if X-Wing's not your thing, join us in the combat patrol.
For sure.
Again, it's going to be right after in Galaxy in Flames. I think that's the third book, right? That's where the Isfahan 3 battle occurs. That's where Garrow takes off in the Eisenstein to try to head on back to Earth. So I'm just trying to work in that whole the battle into the missions to give a nice little narrative to it. I think it's going to be a pretty interesting way to spend the Friday night. The bar will, of course, be open. So even if you're not even going to roll dice on Friday night with us in this event or the X-Wing event, still going to be a cool place to hang out.
Join me for some adult beverages.
Yeah, it should be fun. I mean, that's half the fun of Warzone is that it's just kind of a colossal hangout event. So find us. Troop will be the giant guy who looks exactly like he sounds. Adam will be the handsome guy who looks exactly nothing like he sounds. I'll be just a super tall kid. Yeah, hope everyone stops by. I know that Troop is going to play games. Adam is flying in. That Friday afternoon. So I think just logistics, because he's staying with me, might not be able to participate in the actual events, but we'll be around. So definitely stop by and say hey.
I think we'll be publishing the wait list for the main 40K event pretty soon. It's because we get lots of questions about where they are on the wait list. And it's more of just technology wise why it hasn't been published, but I think we'll get it published up pretty soon. Andrew, in the first part of the show, we talked about a couple of the sponsors for the event. And we're going to continue to talk about those things as we get closer to the event. Cause it just wouldn't be the same if we couldn't prize as much as we want to. And the sponsors are an absolute huge part of that. This episode, I want to talk about finishing moves. I want to bring that back. We have not talked about finishing moves in a couple of weeks.
Finishing moves last week,
and it's caused a little bit of a stir. So I want to make sure that we hit it this episode. And this episode, I want to talk about power weapons. So what is finishing moves for anybody that hasn't or maybe forgotten about it because it's been a couple of weeks? Is this is stuff you can do to your models that you don't have to necessarily be an artist or have any super technique or anything to do. This is just things that either we have learned to accomplish or seen other people do, or things you could spend 5 or 10 extra minutes on your model to really get it that shine, that look that wouldn't have been there, isn't there on most miniatures.
And can I take it even a slight step further, Paul?
Sure.
If you'll allow it. You know, we talk about the three, you know, the three paint minimum or three color minimums for tournament entries a lot. Like that's a big part of most painting rubrics at tournaments. This is what you do after you've gotten your army to, you've just finished painting that, you know, that new army just in time, for the next big tournament. These are the things that you can do to take it up a notch, you know, and maybe try and push those paint scores a little bit if you're going for the overall, in my opinion.
Every point counts really in a lot of tournaments and different rubrics. So yes, everything counts. And power weapons, I don't think I've ever painted the same power weapon on two models. Like it's always a little bit, I have some kind of variation, something a little bit different on pretty much every model I've ever painted.
See, now for me, this segment specifically for me is like the bread and butter for what I want to hear, because I'm the guy that paints my power weapon silver, puts a blue glaze over it and calls that a day. Like, that's not what.
Well, that was a quick tip. That
so Duncan, what do you, what do you mean by blue glaze? Like, yeah, all those things are important, right?
Well, so that's something our man Duncan Rhodes just showed on one of their daily tips. And that's, by the way, if you like this segment, I mean, and you're obviously aware of theirs too. That's, I mean, they're doing some daily paint tip videos and on their Facebook page, on the Games Workshop Facebook page, Warhammer TV. And it, I mean, they're very cool. And he shows you, he's got his enthusiasm. It's awesome. Check him out.
So if you're listening and you're in your car, so I answer questions about glazes all of the time because a lot of people don't know what their purpose is. And I just want to give a quick sidebar
here. They're to paint yellows. That's what glazes are for.
Exactly. It's how you paint yellows. I know that you just talked to our good friend Justin Pizzaferrato about how to paint yellow. And that's one way that you told him, you know, Cassandra or yellow. Glaze is very similar to a wash in that it is much more transparent. But the way it sits on top, when you paint it, you actually spread it on top of the entire surface and you can blend colors into each other. It has a tighter surface tension than a wash does, where a wash will recede into the recesses of the model. A shade will essentially tint the model. And maybe tint is a better term for these paints. So anytime you think shade, think tint. You're altering the color of the model with the shade colors, if that makes sense.
But to where Justin was saying, though, you can do that on a power, and it doesn't even have to be over silver. I have done it in the past where I've used grays, where I've used a dark gray as the base, and then I've done all the shading of like the highlight effects and lighter grays going all the way up to a white, and then put a green wash over it and gave me a really nice, almost like a gem looking type weapon.
I've got news for you. I've you know, the airbrush fade is a big thing, and it's something that we could discuss on the show and later in this episode as we're getting into this. But one of the coolest and most simple techniques that I've picked up, and I just did it on the recent Dark Angels army. We were trying to find a way to tie everything together between the Deathwing, the Raven Wing, and then the quote unquote Green Wing. And I thought, what better way than a ghostly green color? You know, it's something that kind of complements the other green. It's not the same. It's not like a yellow shade green. It's more of a blue shade green. It really fit with the Dark Angels theme. I mean, Dark Angels are kind of gothic. They're a little emo, not quite as emo as the Raven Guard, but
mega gothic, mega not gothic, that emo.
Not that emo.
Mega gothic, not that emo.
So here's what I did. And you can do this with a dry brush, you can do this with a wet blend, and you can do this with an airbrush, but here's how I start. I start with a very turquoise-ish color on the sword or the weapon, whatever it is. Make sure I get a nice clean coat of that. I airbrush white over top of that. And then you could always dry brush the white if you need to. And then this is where it gets a little bit weird. Games Workshop, and y'all know there's other companies that make very similar formulas and similar paints to this, but Games Workshop makes their Nylock Oxide. And you wash that on top and kind of blend the white into the teal or turquoise color. And if you have to, you go back with the white and dry brush a little bit more to blend it back in. Do a quick edge highlight of white around the edge of the sword. Bam, you've got a power weapon. And that takes no effort at all.
So the Nylock Oxide is one of my favorite. I think it's probably my favorite of the effects paints that GW produced. I
mean, it's Blood for the Blood it's God, become a miracle God. Product almost. It's not yeah. Devlin Mudd. It's not Devlin Mudd status.
It's not quite Devlin Mudd status, but it is close.
I still don't think it beats Typhus Corrosion, though.
Well, you can apply Typhus Corrosion with your thumbs, and that gives it an advantage.
I'm gonna have to disagree. I think that the Oxide one is it's a strong silver medalist to the Devlin Mudd. It's basically paint skill in a bottle.
But I mean, let's get back on the track on the power weapons itself, though, because this is something. There are many different ways to do it, and I think that the real thing that you want to do is have that contrast. Like, you don't be afraid to go to that next level of brightness that maybe you didn't do on the rest of your army. So maybe you only have one highlight on a shoulder pad or the bulk of your army. Go two and three level of highlights on a power weapon.
Yeah, give it some depth to it and stuff. Like, you want the power weapon to draw some focus to it.
I also suggest contrasting colors, too. Not to cut you off, Justin, I apologize. But, I mean, having a contrast color, much like you do, the lens, whatever lens color you paint for your Marines might be the color you choose for a power weapon. Yeah, I mean, use your own judgment on that, of course, but you want it to really stand out. I think that's where you were going, Justin.
So for those of y'all that are listening and don't know what a contrasting color is, I'm going to do a quick lesson in color theory. It'll take 2 minutes tops. Is that all right, Paul?
Tell them to Google the color wheel.
You can Google the color wheel, but you have three primary colors. They're in yellow, red, and blue. You have secondary colors, and those secondary colors are green, orange, and purple, right? We all know that. But a complementary color is one that opposes the other. So
Highlight that it opposes the others. So you're going to be looking the opposite side of the color wheel when our opinion of what color you should be choosing or colors you should be choosing for this experiment.
Exactly. So red, the natural opposing color for red is green. Purple works just as well. You kind of want to pull from the secondary colors, in my opinion, if you are trying to complement one of a primary colors and vice versa. But it's, you typically don't use blue to complement green. Although it looks fantastic, it can look fantastic, but an easier way to pop a model and make it stand out is to use an opposing color or a complementary color. So complementary color and opposing color are the same thing.
I'm happy that you brought that up because that's something that people can go and look at and see. Obviously, what you think is best. Or, I mean, you're the one that has to look at the model and be happy with it. So, I mean, I guess what I want to really highlight, I guess is the best word, but I want to focus in on the fact that the power, don't be afraid to get a little bit garish or that next level of glow. Like when you're painting a gym, you paint the first dot of the dark, you paint the whole thing black, then you paint the dot of the darker color, then you have like two or three lighter colors where you go up to that dot of white. You know, that's the same mentality I think that you want to use when you're attacking a power weapon.
Power weapons, there's almost no rules. I mean, you could, if you're painting Ultramarines, you could have a blue power weapon and still make it look fantastic. It's all about execution.
I don't know if that's true. I mean, there are, to the extent that there are artistic options to make power weapons look good no matter what you do, that I agree with you. But when you say there are no rules, I don't disagree. I kind of disagree with that because.
But what are the rules? So you're a lawyer. What are the rules? What are the laws?
What does the codex state about power weapons?
What are the power weapon laws?
The power weapon laws, at least for, again, Codex Space Marines has a litany of options for how you would paint Space Marines models, be they Assault Marines or Tactical Marines or Terminators or Tubbs, by that I mean Centurions, whatever it is. There are illustrations in there of how you would paint these ubiquitous models. Included in that is how power weapons generally appear in Codex Space Marines. And power weapons generally appear as the Duncan Rhodes videos. They are, it's metal, washed with some kind of color and then highlighted. So to the extent that you want to emulate what is in your codex, there are rules. To Adam's point, if you're not really preoccupied with making sure that your models look like what's in the codex, then yes, there are no rules and the sky's the limit. But
we don't need to paint between the lines.
What I want to get from this segment is, when I'm using my base silver color and then I put my glaze on it, and so now, like, I want to take it up to the next step. Like, that's where I want to go.
I think that anybody can do that, though. We're talking about past that. We're past the silver. Yeah. Gloss stage. Yeah. We're on to the, so you can look at
what this, am I doing next?
Yeah. I'm thinking that if you're just starting out, if you're going from that stage to this other stage, like, I don't know anybody who really does it that way you're talking about. I've always seen either it's just been painted, you know, if I got a blue Marine, the sword is painted red and then highlighted with a little orange and going with their life. And that's completely fine too. Where I'm saying is to get it past that, I think you need to kind of look at it from as if you were painting a gem. Everyone knows, you know, at least what how White Dwarf tells us to paint our gems. And you can look at it. There's a bunch of tutorials out here also. Our man Duncan just did a tutorial on painting Necron weapons. And they use the green colors. And you can apply that same color theory to every single power weapon you encounter. And the weapon you're painting may not be the hook scythe of the Necron, but if you can do the same color pattern on both sides of a straight power sword, and it's you're going to get the same effect. I think that pushing it to that next little notch, though, is not being afraid to go the extra highlights and making sure that you get 3 and 4 colors worth of highlight contrast on that sword.
Okay, so are you talking about the we've seen it where the top of the sword on the left is like a dark blue and then the bottom of the right and then alternating like a lighter color underneath each?
You're doing the counterfade.
Until you blend into the middle. Go ahead.
What Paul's talking about is like I call it the counterfade.
And that's just one way of doing it. This is just one and way of doing a power weapon.
So do you want me to walk you through the steps real quick of how to do that, the counterfade? Because I think that is what most of the world recognizes as a power weapon.
Well, that's what the airbrush tutorial place has told us. But it looks good too, by the way. I mean, this is not knocking that. No, I get it. I know you can. I'm gonna say, but that style became real super popular. I think when everyone started getting the airbrushes, and that is one way to do the power weapon also. But the number of colors that they use in those is the same number of colors that I think you should be using to really make your power weapon stand out, even if you're going in with a brush. Colors. Yeah.
Yeah. Three colors. I mean, 4 if you want to make it look super, super.
I think 4 should be my way anyway, would be that final really bright edge highlight.
I see. And the way I like to do it, and this is just purely, I think, a stylistic point of view.
This is all stylistic. This is all just what our preferences. And I would just kind of want to, during these segments, I want to arm people with enough things to do to have something that applies to them and maybe something easier to do. Because different things that we do are easier for other people to do.
Generally, like my most extreme highlight with the airbrush, or even if it's painted on, is the brightest color that I want on that model, even with the edge highlight. So my edge highlight will mimic that color as it's being dragged over across the rest of the model. Because that's a more realistic approach to how light.
You can tie the whole thing together too. Like when you draw that really bright edge highlight from the tip all the way down to the bottom, and if you cross over, you know, darker areas, I think it helps tie the whole thing together. In some cases, not every sword's the same, but that's what I find sometimes.
It adds what I like to consider a more realistic contrast to the model. You know, the Games Workshop way of painting is a beautiful way, and it's a way that we've all, and it's not just Games Workshop, but many model painters follow that technique where you take your brightest blend of colors or straight up white and use that as your most extreme highlight, and that works. It's fantastic. It's beautiful. My preferred technique, and maybe it's just because it's easier when you're painting, you know, I paint armies at a time, you know, to get the best effect on every model. My tactical marines, when I paint an army, are painted to the same ability as my chapter master or my ultra special character, whatever you want to call it. And one of the ways that I found to do that is using my most extreme color for my most extreme highlight with the airbrush, or again, the paintbrush, dry brush, and using that as my edge highlight and blending that back down into the darker shades. And that's, I think, what we're talking about here with this, is creating that sense of blending. You know, it's two things with the power weapon. We talked about primary and contrasting and opposing colors.
We're not talking about painting lightning and stuff on there. I've seen some impressive power weapons that we are not going to get on this podcast.
Yeah, so like before I get too far down the rabbit hole, we were talking about shades, and shades are, Justin, thank you for bringing that up, are an effective way, an extremely effective way to pull off power weapon effects. If you look up the Necron, what was the weapon called, Paul?
I can't remember. I don't do Xenos. I'm just kidding. I can't remember what it is.
So if you go to Warhammer TV, Duncan did a video about painting Necron, Tomb Blades or something like that. And he uses a glaze that he made himself. And the way he did that is taking the Lamian medium and thinning down Necrotite clean and working that up, And what that allows you to do is take several light layers and really control the blend on there. And that's what you're really looking for on a power weapon.
Go back and just also, if you want to get, he starts doing that stuff with the different washes. Let's not even just use the intimidating term of a glaze or whatever. Just washes when he paints Nagash. He does a lot of work on blending.
And a la real too.
If you take nothing from the edge highlighting, nothing that maybe you just that's not what you're going to do. Go and look at the way the washes get blended on Nagash. Well, let's close this out because we're going to get into style and stuff like that. But let me go round table. Ard coat, a shiny coat on your power weapons? Yes or no, Justin?
I don't like it. No.
Whitaker.
Negative.
Abramowitz.
I reserve gloss coats for lenses and cockpits.
I do not do it often, but I found like on special characters, sometimes I do it just to see how it looks. I actually find myself tending to not prefer it, but it is a way to give that extra sheen to it.
Yeah, don't let our stylistic choices not inform, but at least like be demonstrative in your decision making.
No, absolutely not. You got to pick what's good for your army, yeah, whatever you like.
Yeah, absolutely. And the gloss coat over the power weapon is not – of all the times to use a gloss coat – that's not the worst. Like, I will certainly say that. If you decide, like, you know what, I really want to wrap this power weapon in a gloss coat, okay. I'm not going to be critical if you decide to
wrap okay. power weapon. Do you guys gloss coat gems?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
All right. Oh, yeah.
You guys, if you want to look at somebody who's doing some really cool stuff between, like, using gloss and matte coats to vary textures, and it's a painter that I look up to immensely, is Third Eye Nuke. Third is in number three. I is in we have an I, and Nuke is in.
He's great.
I mean,
no doubt. I love that amazing stuff. I think that there's a number of commission painters, and obviously, until they start buying ad space on Fourth and have done that. I don't know if I can name them by name, but yeah, there's a number of really really great painters. Third Eye Nuke, Beyond the Brush, and there's a couple really really great painters who do that. I think that gloss coats specifically should be used in moderation, but they have their place. Without a doubt, they have their place. I know that I gloss coat, for example, not only all of my gems, but my lenses on my vehicles. So, for example, if you look at my Imperial Guard army, I have a huge Vestroian force. All of my vehicles have gloss coat over the lenses or... I don't know.
Spotlights and stuff.
Spotlights, any reflective surface.
I didn't know this is going to be its own topic. We could win the gloss or not the gloss.
Yeah, to gloss or not to gloss. That is the question.
We are continuing. This is part B of the
Shakespearean AFs. But yes, to be sure. There's a time and place for it.
Well, we're definitely out of time. I want to appreciate everybody sharing your thoughts on this. Because power weapons, just to sum up, is... I think, and you guys, I know everyone's going to have their own opinion, but I think that don't be afraid to go that extra level of highlight, even above and beyond maybe what you did for the rest of the miniature, and use contrasting colors. Those are my personal opinions on the subject. What that means to you in your own style, and of course what blends to your army is up to you guys, but I'd love to hear y'all's thoughts on this subject, because I know for as many different people there are, we all have our own different style of power weapon. Guys, do you have anything else you want to add before we get out of here?
Power swords, as a gamer, when we're talking about painting, more power swords are the answer. Low key. From a tactical perspective and as a painter's perspective, power swords are incredible, and they're also should be added in all of your lists.
I had a good time. Hey, we'll
talk about that next week.
I know you're messing around. They're great on Terminators. Anyway, I'll talk to you later.
All right, bye.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, guys.
I see dead people.